This is the Beer of the Day podcast.
We need to quash this stupid fantasy that Mars is a perfectly reasonable planetary backup. Movies, TV shows, magazines, and this constant drumbeat to get to Mars, explore Mars, colonize Mars. To paraphrase Jan Brady, Martians, Martians, Martians. Budweiser announced they're investigating how to brew quality beer on Mars. Something they can't even do here.
From Beer of the Day World Headquarters in Elk Grove, California. This is the Beer of the Day podcast. Tonight we have a very special visitor. In the flesh, we have none other than Jeffrey Miller here in Elk Grove. And to celebrate the occasion, we have 8 beers to try from throughout the country. We even have the strangest beer in the world from New Zealand, and 8 different styles. We've got a Belgian style, a wild ale, an imperial lager, a Brett IPA, a red IPA, a stout, and a porter, all on the show tonight. I'm Dallas Hulliker. Joining me tonight, Britton Miner, Joel Miner, Kira Hopkin, and right here in studio, Jeff Miller.
Hey, everyone.
Hello.
Welcome, welcome.
I love these in-person shows the best.
Yeah, it's more fun that way. You don't have as much beer to drink, though.
I think we're covered. We got 7 really large bottles and 1 can. So we're all set.
I think the last time I did a podcast with Jeff live, I was in his parents' backyard.
That was a summer show.
Yeah.
You're right.
Maybe close to a year ago. All right, well, let's get into the first beer of the night. This is from my favorite brewery from Vermont, Hill Farmstead, in collaboration with Brasserie de Blagies. I'm sure I just butchered that name. From Greensboro Bend, Vermont. This is 6%.
Now, this might be the lightest beer I've ever seen.
It's a straw color, a very, very light straw color.
Lots ahead. I mean,
can we get a determination on what style of beer this is? I said it's a Belgian, but is this a funk beer? Is this a partially sour? I don't even know what to expect here. A sourdough, saison?
It smells a little skunky.
Very skunky.
So it's a saison. I mean, it's a farmhouse style saison.
And if that's the case, you expect there to be a little funk to it. Whoa.
There's some funk.
Oh, that's horse blanket right there.
So this brewery only bottles these types of beers that will age well. You know, we went there and tried a ton of their IPAs, but they don't bottle any IPAs because they want them to be fresh and they want to control that. So this is one of the styles that you can get from Hill Farmstead in a bottle.
It smells like the mold on the outside of cheese, but not in a bad way.
Like a little cheese rind?
Cheese rind, yeah.
After you get accustomed to the funk, I get a little bit of a lemon, soapy type of aroma to it.
But going back to the color, I mean, you're right. This is so light. It's not even straw colored. It's almost like
a weird,
it's like
lemonade.
Lemon juice.
I would describe like white straw is, yeah. I don't even know if that's not even a thing, but it's so light. The huge head on everyone's
thick head
sticking around, but it doesn't,
small bubbles, but it's very
much?
Foamy.
Yeah.
Very foamy.
Almost like egg whites.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost like Dawn that won't go away when you have it in the bottom of the sink. And you're like, God, just go away so I can see the bottom of the sink.
But even like, I'm looking at the bottle, even inside the bottle, there's a ton of head that you can see. I mean, that's not something you see very often.
I know that's not the same style, but it smells like how I would expect a beer to come out of a green bottle to smell. Does that make sense? Like, Heineken kind of smells the same, like that. It's a little bit skunky. Yeah.
This bottle's green.
It's green, yeah.
Yeah, the green thing, it makes me think like it's foreign, you know? It's from...
It not
has
here?
A Belgian type of
well,
style to it because it's a green bottle.
Well, and it is a collaboration with a Belgian brewery, and it's, I mean, yeah, it looks European. I mean, it, the label looks very old fashioned too. Like this could have been like a label from like 40 or 50 years ago, like an old wine bottle label almost.
Definitely. Like when I saw it, I thought like late 60s. Mm-hmm. It just looks
it
retro.
Looks kind of like a wine bottle in general.
Yeah, it does.
And it's brewed there. And I think that I could guess that beforehand.
So we're all laughing because Jeff drank all of his beer and he still has a whole glass full of foam.
He has like five fingers of foam left in the glass.
The Hill Farmstead Brewers traveled to Brasserie de Blaugis to share in the kindred bond of farmhouse brewing. The result is this classic Saison brewed with spelt and an abundance of Amarillo hops. A true expression of noble Belgian tradition and artistic American innovation from the families at Brasserie, Blaugis, and Hill Farmstead.
I think the problem that I'm having is I'm not used to this style. It is very dry. It doesn't have a lot of sugar and malts that we normally get in our beers. I think we're so used to a ton of malts being loaded into our, you know, our brews that we're just not used to this style.
I mean, it's very dry. It's very carbonated. I mean, you can just, when we open this, you could just tell by the noise it makes that it's going to be carbonated, that pressure. But look, you know, the taste of this beer, because I don't think we've said too much about that. I mean, there is definitely a fair amount of hops, like more so than I would normally expect from this style. And it's sort of a citrusy lemon flavor, which I enjoy. I mean, it's a very refreshing, light beer. I mean, I think this is actually very well done. I mean, we expect it to be high quality from this brewery. I think it's very well made.
It's not traditionally Belgian, though. It's like there's no Belgian yeast or anything like that. It really tastes very European, and it tastes like kind of an Amstel or a Heineken.
Or an Eastern European style, like Czechoslovakian beer or something.
Right. And if on the smell, you get a lot of that funk and horse blanket and all that. But on the taste, I'm not getting that funkiness at all.
No, there's no funk. And I am actually really enjoying this beer. I think that it is I am getting like Belgian-y kind of yeasty notes in it, but it's super reserved. It's kind of hard to pick out because it doesn't last. Like it ends pretty crisply. And it doesn't pack like a Belgian-y punch like a normal Belgian would.
And I get what Dallas was saying about the yeast, but I'm sure it's probably made with Belgian yeast, but it doesn't have these strong like flavors of the yeast that we get from a lot of Belgian beers. But there is a presence there. I mean, it's you get some yeast, a little bit of malt, some hops. It's very balanced.
That it is. All right, well, before we get into the next beer, who has a beer they wanted to mention that they had this week?
I have one. I had a Belching Beaver peanut butter latte the other day, and it was fantastic. And the peanut butter milk stout is probably one of the first beers that I really, really liked. And I've kind of moved on from it a little bit, but this one is excellent. It's very creamy with peanut butter, no chocolate. So that's kind of what I like about it. It's a little bit different than all of the other like peanut buttery chocolate offerings that they have. So I highly recommend picking it up if you want something that's a bit different.
Definitely wanted to try that. Britton posted that beer up on the Beer of the Day website, and I noticed that she did that. And so I scheduled that as the Beer of the Day tomorrow. We are recording this on the 28th of April, but since it's after 10 o'clock p.m., it's officially the 29th on the East Coast. And so this is the beer of the day as we speak. Anybody else?
I had one this week that I thought was pretty good. And I don't want to like steal a future story here, but last night I had the Tiranena. It's a double IPA called Hop Whore. I'm not sure if I like that name, but it's a brewery that we are going to in a couple weeks. And this is one of their double IPAs. It was excellent. The flavor reminded me a lot of Melvin, some of their double IPAs, just very like strong fruit flavors. It was really enjoyable. And we've had several barrel aged stouts from Tiranena. This is my first time trying one of their IPAs and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, looking forward to visiting them for sure. We'll tell you later on in this show about our upcoming trip and all the places we're going to visit. And if you want to come out and say hi to us, you're more than welcome to. All right, the next beer is Cerise de Michigan. I originally on this agenda wrote unknown ABV, but Joel smartly looked at the bottle and determined that it's 7.5%. This is an American wild ale, Lake Effect Brewing Company, Chicago, Illinois. We are going to Chicago for a couple of days next week. I'm not sure if this is one of the ones on the list, but if this beer is good, guess what? It's going on the list.
This is somewhere in between a peach color and a red color. I'm not sure if it's pink or red. It's like somewhere right in between.
Looks like a rosé.
Yeah.
For our wine drinking friends out
there. Yes. At first, like when Joel first poured it, I thought it kind of looked like a clear tangerine juice. Like it looked pretty like an unnatural orange color. But if you hold it up to the light, like it definitely has a pink tinge to it.
Yeah, it's like a pinkish apple juice, but it's very clear. I mean, you can see right through it, which is surprising for how, you know, dark it is in regards to like the amber, rosé, pink color to it.
Really good looking beer. I love that color.
Yeah, it's very different. I like it.
It's like halfway between pink and orange.
Mm-hmm.
Very thin head, half a finger of small bubble film on the top.
It smells fantastic. It smells, you pick up the cherry for sure.
I'm getting like raspberries too.
And kind of sour tart cherries. I mean, that's, we haven't had a lot of sour beers on this show. You know, it's been kind of all the rage lately and we haven't had too many of them, but just smelling this, I mean, it is tart. And I mean, I think for a sour fan, this is very inviting.
I saw on our beer of the day inventory that Jeff has started segregating the sours off to a section, which means there's a sour show coming up at some point soon. So stay tuned for that.
I'm excited. Schedule me for that one. I'm super excited.
Whoa.
It almost tastes like a rosé and a beer combo. Like I get a little tartness, but I get the sweetness at the same time.
You sounded like delicious dish right there.
I really enjoy this. I mean, I'm getting a lot of fruit though, not just cherries. I get like some apple tartness, like green apple tartness, but also blueberries. I don't know. There's just a lot of fruit, like tart, but not, I mean, drinkable. I like this. I think it's refreshing.
This is one of the times that I wish Steve were here because he would be able to tell us exactly like which type of cherry we're tasting, because I feel like this tastes different than a lot of other cherry beers that I've had, but it still tastes like cherry. So I want Steve to tell me whether it's like a Queen Anne or a, you know, he would know all that stuff.
Steve's in Sweden.
Sweden.
This activates the heartburn the trigger.
This is a very refreshing beer. It's not as complex as I like. When I see something that says like American wild ale or something that's going to be sour, I want something that's going to complicate my palate. To me, this is just not as complicated as I want it to be. Everything seems kind of muted. It just doesn't have the intensity that I'm looking for in like a American wild ale.
I agree with you. I think that it's sour, but it's sour in a weird way. It's not sour in like where it gives you that crazy pang in the back of your molars. Like it's not that sour. But I would say it's more than tart, if that makes any sense. Like it is sour. It's just not.
I get the mouth watering part from the sour, but you don't get that little zing at the end that just kind of.
Yeah.
I get some sweetness in the finish though. It's like tart at the beginning and sort of in the middle, but at the end there's some sweetness that I like. This is also, I just looked at the bottle, it is aged in wine barrels, which you know some oakiness, some wood flavors there.
I also get a little bit of like sour, like not ready strawberries as well in there,
like underripe
strawberries, and I actually like it. I think if I had friends who were like, hey, I tried sours and I don't like them at all, I'm like, hey, try this as a ramp up sour to get into sours. This is be like a good, a good warm up to sours and your friends that you want to start getting more into sours with you. God, how many times am I going to say sours? I think this is a good starter for the people trying to test out the waters.
What about the mouthfeel on this? Like, I think there's sort of light carbonation, which makes this, it's a beer you're going to sip, even though it's not super high alcohol. This is like something, summer, hot summer day, you sip it, but it's got kind of a...
Is it not 7.5%?
I mean, it's 7.5.
It does not taste like 7.5.
No. Yeah, the alcohol is well
hidden. It tastes like it's a lot lower than it is, but I feel like I could drink it.
I'm gonna
a couple of them throughout the day.
I'm gonna disagree. I'm gonna say that this beer is making me thirsty for water. Like it's, I wouldn't drink this on a hot summer day because it would only make me more thirsty.
Is it a little salty, like briny?
I actually think it is a little bit briny.
Yeah, now that you mention it,
not ghost of status, but
it kind of it is actually.
Yeah,
you know,
but good call.
Like if I just drank this in a blind taste, I might think it's a Gosa.
It does remind me of the kind of style like that cucumber crush that we had. It just feels very similar to that.
Dallas, what do you think?
I think it gives me heartburn. I think I go back to what Britton said initially, where it's not super complex. There is a little bit of that sour strawberry cherry type of flavor. It's kind of a one note. And then you get the little sour, wave of sour. And then you get a little sweetness in the aftertaste. And it's maybe it's brilliant in its simpleness.
Is it maybe like an acidic rhubarb pie type of flavor? Where there's some sweetness, some sourness?
I still feel like there's a... Like it was... The wine barrels that it was aged in was like a rosé or something to that effect.
Could be.
Es posible. And now it's the time in the show where we try the Star Destroyer Imperial Dark Side Lager. This is a collaboration between Ecliptic Brewing and Gigantic Brewing, both from Portland, Oregon. This weighs in at 8%. Now, when I see an Imperial Lager, in my mind, I think light colored. Even though it says Dark Side Lager, I still expected this to be light colored. And now I am surprised and also
bewildered.
Seems pretty obvious that it would be dark. And we have a Coca-Cola colored brown beer.
A little red.
Very like, thin head. A little red, yeah, peeking through.
Well, you're the thinnest head. The head's actually very foamy and like khaki colored.
Sorry. The way you said khaki, I was like, what are you wearing from Jake from State Farm? Sorry.
Khakis?
Man, I...
That aroma.
I'm getting molasses and maple syrup, and it's really good smelling. I have not tasted it yet, but I'm getting that strong maple flavor.
Doesn't it smell like a lager? No, not at all. I don't think.
No, I don't think.
You're not getting molasses or maple in there?
No.
Yeah, but it doesn't. Like,
yeah, I am.
If I just smelled this without seeing it, if somebody said it was a lager, I'd think they were lying to me.
I think so, too. Oh, I mean, lager is the yeast that they're using, so it's like...
And the process.
You know...
No. Put your nose in that and tell me you don't get a Marzen.
I get peanut
Well, Marzen
butter.
Is a lager. I mean, it smells like a Marzen.
Right. But it's also like Doppelbach.
Butter.
You know, all those German are all lagers. Those dark ones.
It smells like peanut butter.
A little peanut butter vibe to it. Yeah, for sure.
I just want to give a shout out to Ecliptic and Gigantic. Y'all a bunch of Star Wars nerds brewing a beer. I like it.
On the aroma, I get a lot of nuts also. Like it's nutty.
Yes.
What percentage is this?
8%.
Ocho.
On the flavor, it's a lot more like bricky red than I expected. It kind of tastes like a red ale to me.
Very malty. I mean, it's a very, well, it's a malt forward beer, but on the back end, there's those earthy hops that have that like peppery kick to it, almost like a rye beer also.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a beer that I feel like pulls from a bunch of different styles into one Imperial lager, which Imperial lagers are rare too. I mean, you don't see very many 8% lagers.
You do not.
So Britton is a big fan of like stouts and porters. I actually prefer this style more than I like in a stout and a porter. If I could brew this beer, I would brew it. I'm not sure if I have the ability to do this, but I'm really enjoying the complexity of the different flavors, the sweetness, the caramel, and then the rye and the little bit of bitterness at the end is adding to an amazing profile of complex flavors.
And it's got like a bit of a chalky mouthfeel, which I like. And it reminds me a lot of a brown ale. I mean, we've mentioned a bunch of different styles, but if I just tried this, it would remind me, I would think it's a brown ale.
Yeah. To me, it's not quite as sweet as a brown ale. So that's why I said red, because it really does have a lot of the darker bread qualities. And then, so you're not getting the sweet bread. You're getting,
rye bread.
More rye bread. Yeah.
But that mouthfeel I really enjoy. It's like chalky, powdery. I mean, it's like thick, like you're sort of biting. You got to chew this beer a little bit.
You do.
I think that if I tasted this blindly, I would not ever guess in a million years that it's a lager. It tastes like a porter.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little thicker body than most porters. Seem thin to me, and it's a little thicker than most porters I'm used to.
A little more maltier.
Yeah, that's what when I was marking down my sheet, I wrote that it smells and tastes like peanut butter with like a malted milk ball or whatever, but without the chocolate. Like it's not, I wouldn't describe it as chocolatey, but there's like that malted.
Almost like a
Whopper without the chocolate.
It's almost like a coffee extract kind of base.
Kind of like burnt.
With peanut butter.
Burnt.
Roasty.
Toasted malts, yeah. There's a bite on the end. Like this leaves a lingering sort of bitter, like Joel said, but it's just got a sort of kick on the back end.
I like it. It's different.
Completely different than I expected.
Yeah.
So that was a complete surprise. And now let's get into the beer news of the day.
The news story this week, Britton, lay it down. What's going on besides North Korea?
So I think that this kind of cause is something that is becoming more and more prevalent, and that is that food waste is becoming a like popular mantle to take up and reduce. And this person, Tristram Stewart, decided that he was
going to... Tristram.
Tristram. Ooh, I missed the... Tristram? Old Tristram.
An Englishman. I don't think you can get a more English name than Tristram Stewart.
Stewart. He is deciding that he is going to take leftover bread and brew beer with it. So he is selling toast, which is an English ale with malt and citrus notes. And he's using old bread, one slice per bottle, to brew this beer.
So we've all been, well, most of us here have been to Sierra Nevada, and we know that they take all of their leftover malts and
feed it to the cows.
The wort,
that whatever. Then are served in their restaurant.
Yes.
This is true. Oh, it's a morbid cycle.
And I'm not saying that they give them a table.
They're delicious, by the way.
But it is good to see that the breweries are usually very conscious of how they're using the waste that comes from the brewing process. When I went to Lagunitas, the same thing they're doing. They're taking all of the leftover grains and used grains, and they're giving them to local farmers so that they can have, you know, basically reuse all the leftover from the brewery.
So while I think that this concept is awesome, there are a couple things in the article that I had questions about. And the first one is, the logistics of it. So it says in the article that it took them months to find a brewer who would even do this, because like the bread could gum up the works basically, and like they didn't know how it was going to work out trying to actually brew a beer with actual bread, like pieces of bread is what they're using.
Well, I think that's what makes this interesting is breweries use malted grain, whether it's barley, wheat, whatever it is, and they're using the actual grain. And this is a process of using bread instead of the grain. And I think as a brewer, that makes it probably much more difficult. And they're having to tweak it. They're having to do all these different things. And I think it is probably less consistent than what they're looking for. So I think it's harder for the brewery to do it. I read in the article that Whole Foods, I see, is ordering some of this beer. They put in a request for this brewery to make it because they are interested in selling this beer. It's interesting, though. I mean, it's good that bread is being put back to use that would otherwise be thrown away.
I think that's awesome. But so that brings me to the second question that I had about the article, and that is that they are using whatever used bread they can get their hands on. So it's always different. Like it's either bread or it's bagels or it's something like that. So for me, like when you're trying to build your brand and like make a flagship beer, consistency, I would think, would be key. And they are not going to be consistent in the ingredients they're using. Not that that's a bad thing. It's just a question, you know, it's just a question. How are they going to maintain consistency when they're switching up the bread?
Yeah. It's like one batch at a time.
Yeah.
Whatever bread product that's about to go bad, they use it and it turns into beer.
Unless they're using chemistry to get just a straight simple sugars of some sort. So.
Yeah. I don't know, Professor. All right. Let's get into the next beer. One more before the break. Now, this is a first for me anyway. I've had many, many stone beers that are enjoy by whatever date. And this is the first one that I've had that is enjoy after. Enjoy after July 4th, 2016. Well, guess what?
It's after that date.
It's after that date, so we can enjoy it.
Alrighty then.
This is a Brettanomyces IPA. 7%.
And this was bottled in 2015 in July. So they said at a bare minimum, you know, keep this in the bottle for a year, really to let the flavors develop, the carbonation and whatnot. And I think I was talking to somebody from Stone one time about these beers, and they said, you know, it's very experimental. They don't know exactly how long these will last, but maybe somewhere in the range of 3 to 6 years. After it's bottled, this beer is going to continue to develop and change flavors, and they're all going to be different too, because these are developing in the bottle. So, you know, two bottles may not be alike.
Now, you have another one of these at home, right?
I do.
Nice.
So it pours like you would expect an IPA, maybe a little bit light. It's a little bit more yellow than an IPA. What I noticed is that it is hazy, but you can see like I love to call it the particulate matter in there, but it's very fine.
It's very fine. So it seems kind of clear, but then when you put your finger behind it, it's not clear. And it's because there's little tiny particles floating in there.
No visible sediment like last week?
No.
No readily visible sediment, no.
But on the aroma, I mean, you could smell the Brett. I mean, it's...
I thought it was reserved. I can smell funk, but it's not crazy funk.
No, it's even...
It's sweet funk.
Distinctly Brett.
And it is... It does smell sweet.
But it's not the breadiest beer I've ever smelled before.
Yes. And it smells hoppy. There's hop. I smell hop in there too.
I'm just not getting too much of anything from the smell. It's mostly just like maybe a little bit of that farmhouse ale funk, which can be confusing with Brett. But it's... There's not too much more to that smell than that. Maybe a little bit of corn smell, but just barely there.
Okay, on the initial sip, I've had one sip. I am surprised at the amount of bitterness in this.
Yes, it is. I think the thing that surprised me about the bitterness on the first sip was that it was like, it hung around for a while. And it almost was like a drying bitterness, which I wouldn't normally describe bitter as dry. I feel like they're mutually exclusive, but in this case, they're not.
It just lingers.
Yeah, it keeps going.
I'm not a fan of the lingering.
Me neither.
I mean, it's an interesting beer because at its core, it's an IPA, which these IPAs made with Brettanomyces are going to be very different than the IPAs we normally drink. And it's tart. I mean, I just don't know if I drank this without knowing what it was. I would think it's like a farmhouse ale or a Saison. I wouldn't think it's an IPA. That being said, Stone is known for their hops and very hop-forward beers. It's really like interesting to me that this is a beer that isn't that hoppy being made by Stone. It's sort of a style that is outside of what I'm used to for Stone.
That's interesting.
Do you get the bitterness that sits on your tongue? Like I have I'm getting about 100 IBUs of bitterness that's just hanging on the back of my tongue where you have those bitterness receptors and it lingers for a long time.
Yeah, I get that too.
It's the carbonation, I think, and the bitterness, because it's not like there's not a lot of hops flavors coming through. It's just the IBUs that are coming through.
So, I think it's relative because I think that this is a hoppy beer and I actually think it is more hop forward. I feel like I taste more hop than I do Brett. The Brett is on the back burner for me. It's not that funky. It's not very bready, but it is hoppy and bitter. So if I were to taste this blindly, I would guess that it were an IPA, which is weird. Because I feel like Jeff has a better sniffer and taster than I do.
I mean, I could get that. I mean, everybody's palate is different for sure. But I just like the soapiness and the mouthfeel is so distinctly Brett flavored to me that I just associate that flavor with a style other than IPAs. But that's just because I've not had a lot of Brett IPAs. I mean, there's a lot of them out there now. It's not my favorite style. You know, I enjoy it, but it's very unique. I mean, it's very different from what I would consider a normal IPA.
Yes.
Very different.
Yeah, it is. Still hoppy to me, though.
It's super dry. You know, it's, well, like Joel said, very highly carbonated.
So little sweetness. It's like, I don't know. It's I don't get too much enjoyment out of drinking this beer.
I don't either.
It's too bitter for me. It's enjoy after whatever date. And I think I was hoping for more for a beer you have to save for 2 years.
Yeah, I think on the bitterness too, I think the lingering, like there's a hop bitterness that I'm getting like in the immediate aftertaste. And then as it moves forward, like 10 more seconds, it's more of like that bile bitterness that,
right.
That's what's hanging around.
It's rough.
It's a little,
at least.
I mean, but some people really like the style. It's acidic. Yeah. It's tart. It's some people think this is like the best style of beer there is. It's just maybe just not our type.
It's not the worst beer I've ever had.
Not my type. All right, we're four in and we have four to go when we come back, including our strange brew, the Umami Monster. Maybe the strangest beer we've ever had before. That'll be when we come back right here on the Beer of the Day podcast. All right, real quick before we get back to the show, if you like the Beer of the Day podcast and want to help us out, one way you can do that is by rating and reviewing us on iTunes. We always want to move up the rankings, so if you leave a review, and I'm not telling you what to do, but you know, maybe 5 stars. I mean, that's going to help more than 4 or 3 or 1 star. In fact, 1 star is not going to help us at all. So 5 stars, iTunes review, we move up the ranks, and then we're going to be moving ahead of all the other 50 beer podcasts that are only somewhat as good as this one. So help us up on that front. If you want to help us financially, you can shop on Amazon through the Beer of the Day website. On the right-hand side of the site, there's a little Amazon banner. You click that, you do your shopping, or if you're lazy, just go to amazon.beeroftheday.com. in your browser, you do your regular Amazon shopping, we get a little kickback from Amazon based on what you spend. I guess it was a few weeks ago, somebody came to the site and they bought a Magic Cindy Fun Feeder Slow Feed Interactive Bloat Stop Dog Bowl.
That was from me. I have a problem. I eat too fast. Britain's trying to control
what
me.
What is the hat?
It's probably bad for the dog. It's a dog bowl that has grooves in it, so they can only reach their tongue in and eat a couple kernels of food at a time. It's basically torture for the animal. But somebody bought this. It was Britton or Joel or both of them.
Me. Just for you beer drinkers out there, it's like the coffee straw that you get to stir your drink, or your coffee drink, but you have to drink all your beers through it. So imagine that. That's what it's like for the dog.
Yeah, but Kylo went from taking 10 seconds to eat 4 cups of food to taking 5 minutes. So that's good. That's a good thing.
And he thanks you for that.
I'm sure he does.
You paid $11.99 for it. I got 96 cents.
Oh, yeah.
And that 96 cents we're going to put towards buying beer on a future show. Matter of fact, we've probably already spent that. All right, I'm looking forward to this strange brew. Let's get back to the show.
I feel so like I'm high tonight.
Strange.
Strange brew. Welcome back to the Beer of the Day podcast. I love the Strange Brew segment. This is where we find the strangest beer that we can find. This may be the strangest beer we've ever found.
This might take the cake.
This is Umami Monster from Garage Project, Wellington, New Zealand. It's not even from this hemisphere.
I don't know what the hell this is, but during break, Jeff says, this is what is in the beer. And he showed me a picture of a fish. And I was like, what the hell? So I don't know what this is. This is going to be interesting.
I don't know what I expected it to be, but it's much darker than I thought it would be. For some reason,
well,
I thought it would be
fish guts in it.
I thought it would be more golden hued, but it's not. It's like very, it's a light brown.
So Jeff, you want to tell us what we're getting into, or should we try it first and then look at what we're getting?
Why don't you guys try it? I mean, I've never had this either, but I know what's in this, so let's try it. But I agree, color-wise, it is. I mean, it doesn't say it's an IPA. It just says it's an ale. I assumed it was an IPA, but this is an ale. It's from Wellington, New Zealand. Let's try it. See what you guys think.
I mean, it's brown ale in color. It's a very dark, dark copper, light brown color. Thin head.
But you can't really see through it, which is weird for how light it is. It's pretty...
It's opaque.
Cloudy.
The aroma is very reserved. I don't really get too much coming off of this.
So I didn't... We haven't told them what's in it yet, have we? Mm. So I didn't have high hopes for when we read what's in it.
A little molasses on the aroma.
But the aroma is giving me hope. It smells good.
It smells good. It smells different, though. I mean, it doesn't smell like a beer. There's a unique flavor in there. I can't say what it is. I don't know.
The first aroma smelled like molasses. The first sniff smelled like molasses. The second one smelled like salty fish.
And a little bit of ginger.
I'm getting soybeans.
Okay. Thankfully, I'm still not getting fish.
I'm getting a Japanese restaurant, but like not in a bad way, like in a good way.
Yeah, I get the molasses and cola. It kind of smells like cola.
The taste is tamer than I thought. It tastes a lot like the aroma, where I get a lot of soy sauce, brown sugar type of flavor up front. In the aftertaste, there's some type of spicy... element to it, very mild, but it's certainly there.
So you guys know that dark seaweed paper that's on the outside of sushi?
Yeah, that's what
that's
it is.
That's the aftertaste, I think.
Is that actually what's in it?
I'm getting
well, no,
more
but that's
the
I agree with the taste.
Oh, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm amazing. No, that's what it tastes like. It's like that dark seaweed. It's not bad. That's a strange thing. It's like you're like, oh, I don't want that in a beer.
But it's the aftertaste, right?
Right.
I'm getting a lot in the aftertaste.
That lingers,
that seaweed type of flavor.
I feel like I'm pretty sensitive to that type of stuff because it's not generally my favorite flavor, whether it's fishy or CBD or whatever. That part's very reserved, which I like. I think it's salty, but not in like a gosa way.
Right.
Just like almost like a soy sauce way, I guess.
Yes.
And it's very savory. And I think it's aptly named because umami in Japanese means savory. Like right. that's what it is. And it is a savory beer.
So it's also smoky.
Like yes.
Yes.
It's smoky molasses. But it's not, I don't think it's super sweet. You know, I don't want to mislead anybody here. It's not a super sweet beer. So here's what's in it. And I think you guys are all along the right track here. So a few ingredients that make this one of the strangest beers I've ever had in my life. First, it's made with kelp. It's also made with bonito, specifically dried fermented bonito flakes. Bonito is a type of fish. It's kind of like mackerel. So it's certainly the first beer I've ever made or had made with beer with fish flakes. Can't even say it. So kelp and fish flakes and also seawater. So maybe that's the saltiness you're getting?
Must be.
Yeah, those three things just... So I saw this and I was like, wow. We're always looking for strange brews. Those three ingredients hit the spot.
And they are there and noticeable, but it's not undrinkable and not too strange.
You should have called it like Castaway or Tom Hanks or something. I don't know.
Right. There's a little bit of a sea flavor to it.
But I'm not getting the fishy. Like the you get the fish flakes, but I'm not getting any of that.
The only fishiness I get is seaweed.
Yeah. Yeah. The kelpy seaweed. That's all you're getting.
It tastes like those Japanese rice crackers. And not like after you've been chewing the Japanese rice crackers, but you know how like there's that hard coating that's salty on the top of them? That's what it tastes like. Especially like initially, like the saltiness that I'm getting, like that's kind of what it tastes like, where it's savory. There's a tiny bit of sweet, but it's salty. Like when, to me, I'm a salt fiend. So when I put salt on stuff, it actually makes it sweet for me.
I get the dried seaweed flavor, like those, you can buy like the flaky seaweed stuff and just some people eat it just as a snack. And it's sort of like that in a liquid form.
So if I was a sushi restaurant owner, I would actually have this as a staple beer in my, you know, on my menu.
It would complement the food pretty
especially
well.
Especially like light fish.
Especially like nigiri, right? Where there's like nothing, no other flavor with it. You're just having like the pure fish with some rice. That would be so good like with this.
Yeah.
It's good. I'm not going to buy this again though. Like this is something you try once. But I'm not like thinking, oh, I want to sit down and watch a movie and drink a beer and this is the beer I'm going to drink.
Right. To me, it's a novelty. If I'm going to be eating Japanese food, I'll take an Asahi, and that is like the dry kind of lighter lager type of thing that is the break in between the bites of the food that gives me the savory quality. Now, But I do appreciate the fact that the beer is trying to mirror that type of the food. The beer is trying to taste like the food best as it can.
Honestly, I would pick this up again. Like if I were to run across it, I would drink it again in a heartbeat. It's like everything that I love about the food that I eat, but in a beer. Like, cause I love salty stuff. Like I like it. I really like it.
I like it too.
I'd like to share it with people. I wouldn't like to have it watching a football game or a baseball game.
Well, and that's why I brought this up, because I bought this bottle maybe a month ago. I wanted to share this with you guys, and I didn't really want to drink it on my own.
Definitely fits the segment.
I didn't have high hopes for it when you read what was in it. I was like, oh, I'm going to have to choke this down. This is not going to be good. It is good.
It is surprisingly drinkable.
It's very drinkable.
So the next beer is kind of fitting. It's a collaboration between Northern California and Sierra Nevada Brewery and Southern California and Carl Strauss Brewery. And us here in Northern California have welcomed Southern California Jeff here. And so now we get to try this beer. This is the North by South, or NXS as the cool kids call it.
Or do the cool kids call it North by South?
I don't know.
So this is direct as of yesterday from Sierra Nevada, directly from Chico. Drove, got it, brought it here. We're a day old from the brewery. So.
Is it really a day old? Is that when it was
bottled? I don't know exactly when it was bottled, but I picked it up. We picked it up yesterday from Chico, which is about 60 miles from here, probably.
It was packaged on March 8th at 7:30 in the morning.
I like the color of it. It's quite clear by look, but when you hold your finger behind it, it kind of distorts it. But
little sediment.
Very little carbonation floating up. I don't see any noticeable carbonation, and the head is very thin, copper colored. Maybe
deep copper.
Maybe a little bit of a reddish hue to it, but copper is the overall color.
So who gave me the Olympic pour here?
It's a big bottle. So here's the thing: I've never had a Sierra Nevada collaboration beer that didn't taste more like Sierra Nevada than the other brewery.
True.
This is obviously bottled in Chico, so it'll be interesting to see what it tastes like.
Sierra Nevada has like the dominant genes in collaboration.
Aroma wise, I don't really get much. Does anybody?
It smells like
just
a red.
Hoppy.
I mean, it smells like a red.
Mild,
IPA.
Mildly hoppy.
Mildly
hoppy. Like it's not. It smells hoppy.
Yeah, I mean, I get the aroma of earthy hops and burnt malts.
So on the flavor, though, I'm initially trying to compare this to the Sierra Nevada Red IPA.
Not Firehouse.
Flip side. So right off the bat, I see Sierra Nevada, I see Red IPA. I want to compare it to their Flip Side Red IPA, which is a kind of a seasonal one they come out with, pretty popular. The thing about this beer is that it is more reserved on the red flavors and the rye type of flavors. So I just get a nice smooth hop characteristic, a little bit of not caramel malt, but maybe a shade darker than that, but very tame. And it's just kind of a nice drinkable IPA.
Now this beer is interesting to me, and I think Dallas really characterized the entire beer in one adjective, and that's smooth. From the initial sip, like forward all the way through the aftertaste, I feel like there's a very smooth and subtle transition from where at first it tastes like you're drinking an IPA and it's hoppy, and then it progresses into some sort of bitterness that then smoothly progresses into like it kind of the hop bitterness fades away into this like smooth malt that just kind of like fades away very like unnoticeably almost, and then it's gone. And I really like that. Like it's just very smooth.
And it's 6.5%. You're really on that borderline between pale and IPA. So you get a little IPA qualities, and then, but you know, I think this leads more towards pale or red ale than it does red IPA.
Yeah, it's like a little bit more caramel hop hunter without any of the bitterness.
I think it's malty by Sierra Nevada standards.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it's when I taste this, I'm looking for a lot more hops, but I enjoy it. But it's just a lot more of the toasted and burnt malt flavors that you don't see in a lot of the IPAs.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you have the opportunity to pick this up, you should pick it up and try it. I think it's a good, well-balanced beer. It's not going to be something that's going to blow your socks off, but I think you're going to be able to grab this beer, drink the whole thing, and be like, man, I'm glad I had this beer tonight.
I feel like it's pretty universally appealing.
Yep.
Like, for people who don't like IPAs, I think that you could still dig it. And I think for people who do like IPAs, like, you could find enough hoppiness in it to be like, oh, I'm glad I had that beer.
Well, it's an interesting collaboration because Sierra Nevada is one of the oldest sort of original craft breweries, and same with Carl Strauss. I mean, those are two of the sort of old school California craft breweries, and to see them work together on this, it's a nice beer. I enjoy this, and I like to see the work between these two breweries.
Well, was my initial prophecy correct, though? That you're going to get more Sierra Nevada?
Yes, I think so. But we've had a lot more Sierra Nevada beers than Carl Strauss beers, so maybe we're just a little more inclined to say that.
One thing that I always characterize Sierra Nevada beers as, though, is metallic. I can taste it every time I taste a Sierra Nevada beer, and I would not like describe this beer whatsoever as metallic. There's no metallic taste to it for me.
I agree. Even the Sierra Nevada malt backbone that all their beers kind of tend to have. It's more reserved than this one. I think mm-hmm. it's there, but it's not as noticeable.
Incoming transmission.
You've got mail.
A couple comments this week. We just got through tax season, and we did a bunch of Tax Man Brewing beers. And on Facebook, we're on Facebook at facebook.com/thebeerofthedaybeer. Rich Nagel, oh, Buck Arnett, he says, just enjoyed this from Tax Man. Good stuff. It's called Apropos. It is a, I think it's another IPA. I'm trying to see the picture here, but that's one we had. We had their exemption that we posted on Tax Day itself, which was last Tuesday. A lot of good stuff from Tax Man. I think I'm looking forward to trying more stuff from them. On Twitter, when I posted the exemption IPA on Tax Day, Tax Man, I have a little tagline. Each time I post a beer on Twitter, I put a little three-word or four-word thing at the beginning to try and make it somewhat funny or interesting. I said, one for you, 19 for me, which is the line from the Beatles song. And Taxman Brewing says, seems like a fair enough deal. Cheers, and thanks for sharing this great pick.
Nice.
So it's always good when the brewery responds to us.
That was a great picture, Dal.
I took that on Easter. Tim Sotek posted a beer called Mass Rising Double IPA from Jack's Abbey. This stuff from last night, a dangerously drinkable and tropical up front with a massive shot of grapefruit in the puckering finish. That looks really good. That's one we cannot get here. Tim is in the Northeast. So next time we're up there, we'll have to look for that as well. We're on Twitter at Beer of the Day. We're on Instagram at Beer of the Day site. Facebook, facebook.com/TheBeerOfTheDay. Leave us your comments. We will read them here on the next show. The next beer is a beer from Toppling Goliath Brewery in Decorah, Iowa. This is the Rover Truck Stout. So while Jeff pours it, I'm going to go ahead and take a time right here to tell you about the trip that we're going to be taking, basically a week away. So on the 7th, we are flying to Minneapolis. We are going to spend 2 days there sampling the local scene, beers there. We are then driving to Madison, Wisconsin, 2 days there.
With a stop on the way.
With a stop on the way here, right?
In Decorah,
Iowa. Decorah, Iowa. Toppling Goliath.
Oh,
so
boy.
We're going to the brewery. So I kind of wanted to do a little preview of the beer tonight, and then we'll be able to load Jeff's Pelican nuclear briefcase with as much beer as we can pack out of there.
And I think they're pretty known for their IPAs and their pale ale, like Pseudo Sue, one of the best pale ales out there. This beer we're drinking tonight is a stout. I'm sure it's good, but you know, it's not what I've had from this brewery before.
Pseudo Sue is really good. I got a lot of good feedback on that. I know at the Super Bowl, Joel tried it and he was a fan of it.
And on a recent podcast, we had the X Hops Gold, which everybody really enjoyed. Everybody thought that was one of the best pale ales they've ever had.
Yeah.
It was a good beer.
Yeah, it was close. It was towards the top of the list of beers. I don't know if anyone picked it as the beer of the day. I think maybe one or two people did.
Okay, so I want to talk about the head on this beer because I feel like on the last episode, we said even more Jesus had one of the darkest heads that we'd ever seen. Now, it's lightened up, but when Jeff first poured it, it was crazy dark and it's gotten lighter. Like if you look at like the bottom finger of head, it's much darker than like if you just look in the glass over the top. But it was crazy, crazy dark head like when Jeff first poured it. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is another beer with dark head.
I just watched Jeff do it. And if you swirl like you do wine, it gets darker.
See?
It's instantly darker.
And that's the color it was. Like, see that color there? That's the color it was when Jeff poured it for me.
It's like a dark tan.
No one can see it.
Dark khaki color.
said it correctly this time.
So the aroma on this beer, it's very aromatic. For a beer that's only 5.7%, the aroma on this reminds me of a beer that might be 10%. It really does stand out.
I'm getting like molasses and honey.
Yes.
Yep.
Lots of malt, caramel malt, chocolate malt.
I think the flavor follows suit. I think there's a lot of flavor here for a lower ABV beer.
I think it packs a ton of flavor. There's like, normally I feel like in stouts, if there's like molasses aroma present, molasses is usually like the prevalent flavor too. Like it's thick, it's syrupy. This is not the case with this one. I'm getting a lot of like oatmeal. It's like grainy oatmeal. And then on the back burner is like the molasses and the sweetness, but I'm really liking that this one's a little bit different.
I mean, it could be an oatmeal stout perhaps, but I get a lot of, I mean, it's not a ton, but there's some chocolate, there's some coffee. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is it's a classic stout flavor.
Very subtly smoky. Super subtle.
Yeah, I agree.
It's like if you took a Tootsie Roll and a marshmallow and put it over a fire pit and roasted it and then put it in your mouth.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah, it does.
But not as sweet.
I like this. This is, it has all the same flavors that like a really in your face, like thick, chewy stout would be, but it's all reserved and a lot more subtle. And I think that if people who aren't really big fans of dark beers or porters or stouts, like they could probably get into this and be like, all right, that's all right.
Yeah, but it definitely is. It's full flavored, but it's low alcohol. And so there's not a kick or anything. And so you get all of the big flavors of the big imperial stouts, but in a smaller bite size pack.
I can't believe it's only 5.7%.
I was thinking the same thing even when I smelled it.
Not that it's boozy or alcoholic or anything like that. It's just to have a stout with this low of alcohol, but at the same time all these full flavors, that's pretty impressive to see, because most breweries to get this sort of complex flavor profile have to get up to like 8, 7, 8, 9%.
Right. We have stouts on the show that are 5.5%, 6%. They are, without a doubt, I mean, almost universally watery.
Watery,
and
yep.
Thin, yeah.
Thin, yep. Not the case here. You're getting a full-blown stout, but without a huge amount of alcohol.
Yeah, I think like this is a great introduction stout for people who might be wary of dark beer.
And not to say it's basic. I mean, it's not.
No, not at all.
It's just, I think what you're saying is it's like somebody who's turned off by the color of a dark beer would drink this and really appreciate the flavors.
It is. I will give this warning. It is pretty smoky. I mean, I'm getting a lot of smoke. So I think everybody at this table in general likes smoked meat. Like we enjoy that flavor. I mean, it is pretty smoky and I like that, but I can see how it could be off-putting to people because it does give off a little bit of like that charcoal, like metallic taste at the very end because of how smoky it is.
Yeah, I don't want to insult the beer by saying that this is a good for introductory people to stouts, and maybe it is, but I think this is good for someone who likes stouts.
Oh, yeah, no, totally. Like I love stouts and I really like this beer a lot. What I was trying to say is that I think that in comparison to a lot of other stouts, I think all of the like requisite flavors that you get out of a stout are a little bit more muted and balanced in this beer. And so this might be more appealing to someone who's not like into dark beer.
It has more of a hidden complexity to it.
And it does. Like, it's got some walnut to it that I really enjoy. Like you don't see walnut in a beer very often.
I'm laughing hard because that's pretty good.
I see that, but it's also like soy sauce, like we got in the umami monster. It's
like it's just something that's very simple, but it's something that you do not expect.
I like it. Man. It's good stuff.
But it's delicious.
Can't wait to go to Toppling Goliath.
Yeah, looking forward to it. So then after that, we're going to be in Madison on the 9th and the 10th. We're going to be in Chicago on the 11th and the 12th, and Indianapolis on the 13th for Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
God, you guys get around.
Lucky.
I'm going to be bringing back some beers from Cincinnati as well the following week.
Awesome.
Looking forward to it.
Ooh, we're going to have a good Midwest show, huh?
Yeah, or at least one. Probably several. The way we bring back beer.
Yeah, we do.
All right, before we get into the last beer of the night, let me first mention that beeroftheday.com is not just for Jeff and Britton and Joel and myself to post beers of the day, but anybody can post a beer of the day. We have on the show tonight 8 beers, one from New Zealand and 7 other ones from different states. And so we are always trying to find beer to put on the website from all around the country. But you can help us out considerably by sharing beer from your local region. We don't have any beers from Texas, or very rarely do we get one from Florida, all around. I mean, there's beers from other places in the Midwest or up north, Montana. Every state has a beer scene, and we want to know what's going on throughout the country in craft beer.
We can't do it on our own, people.
Can't do it on our own. So it's very simple. It takes 10 minutes. You take a picture of the beer, you write a description, you add the beer up on the site, and then we will feature it as the beer of the day. And then let's say probably at least 20,000 people will be able to see that beer, and that's going to help them understand what's going on in whatever part of the country you live in. And you don't have to do it for free out of the goodness of your heart. If you post a beer and we feature it as beer of the day, I will send you a beer of the day pint glass free of charge. And as a thank you for helping us with our mission.
Help us out.
Let's get into the last beer of the night. We have, now this is one Jeff brought back recently from St. Louis. And he brought it back up here on ice in his car so that we could have this one tonight. This is an interesting beer in that there's no label on the bottle. It is a brown bottle. We don't know what's coming out of it.
Devoid of any branding.
It's very dark.
And it took me a little bit to take off the wax top here, but let's try this beer and then I'll tell you guys a story about when I went to this brewery.
This is the barrel-aged Arkham's Finest Porter.
Wait, are we sure this is not motor oil?
I mean, it's dark. It's very dark.
It's very, very dark. It's almost black coming out of the bottle, actually.
Now, the thing that's interesting to me is it has a super fine, like one finger head that took a long time after Jeff poured for it to build.
So this is a barrel-aged porter, which we have plenty of barrel-aged beers, but I think barrel-aged porters are not that common for us as well. I mean,
I don't know if
I've said that a lot throughout the show, but This is a style that we don't drink a lot of. We drink porters. We like them. But a barrel-aged porter is unique for us.
If someone told me this was barrel-aged in blueberry bourbon barrels, that's what I would think is...
It sounds crazy, but you're not off. Like, to me, like, it kind of smelled like refrigerated fruit. If that makes sense, like if you walk into, like if you go to Apple Hill or whatever and they have like the refrigerated, it smells like cold fruit. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Probably not, but.
No.
It smells malty. I mean, molasses, like we said, it's the dark caramel and burnt malts, chocolate malts.
I get the blueberry that Joel's talking about.
Yeah, there's like a fruity aroma there.
Mm. One sip, I like it.
I can taste blueberry on the taste, like in right off the bat.
This beer is this. It's roasty. It's intense. It's got a kick.
It's got a kick. I had a noticeable visceral kick, you know, alcoholic kick to it. So the alcohol's there.
Amateur.
I do get the blueberry sweetness, the fruit is pretty mm-hmm. prominent in it as well.
It's like blueberry and brown sugar, a little bit of coffee, a little bit of chocolate.
I think the flavor that sticks out to me the most is the coffee. The blueberry for me is more on the aroma.
I get it on the aftertaste quite a bit.
Aftertaste.
But smooth. I mean, this very is a very smooth, enjoyable beer.
Yeah.
So some background on this. I was at this brewery. It was in February, so it was about 2 months ago. And I was in St. Louis doing some beer tasting, and I went to several breweries. And this was a cool place. It was, it had sort of a like garage, like automobile type of theme to it. And I met Ronnie, who is one of the owners and the head brewer, super nice guy. And he handed me this bottle right as I was leaving. It's sort of a rare, it's like Dallas said, there's no label on this. This was their original version of the Arkham's Finest. It is barrel aged. It's 1/3 of it is barrel aged in Opus One red wine barrels, and 2/3 of
That's
it
are the good stuff.
Yeah, it is. And 2/3 are aged in rye whiskey barrels. And I like that complexity that you know, the oak barrels will lend to this beer. It was bottled a little over a year ago. Even like the alcohol percentage, it's somewhere between like 8 and 8.2%. It's like an estimate, because this is not a beer that most people can just go pick up. It's a unique thing we got from this brewery, and I really like the flavors here.
So yeah. It's interesting that you say that it was aged in the Opus One barrels and in bourbon barrels, because rye barrels. Because the next thing that I wrote down before you started talking was, if you concentrate really hard, there's vanilla and cherry in there, and that must be from the wine barrels.
I think so.
And it's pretty fantastic.
I get no rye, though. I'm surprised that it was aged 2/3 in rye barrels, because I don't get much of the rye, but I get much more of the vanilla, like you said, sort of a little bit of sweetness, like I would have expected bourbon barrels.
I think the thing that surprises me the most about it is that for a barrel-aged beer, it's incredibly smooth. It's really smooth. And the more I drink it, the more I am enjoying it and picking out like different flavors. Like, it's very complex. The more you drink it, like, the more I'm picking out.
I think for anybody who enjoys complex beers, you're going to be excited you tried this beer, because this is a beer you don't have every day. And you can tell that the brewer put a lot of effort into making a beer that was unique and something that you're not going to have every day. And like, hands, you know, my hat's off to these guys. I mean, this is a very difficult beer to brew and brew well, because you can mess it up a lot. Yep. And these flavors really complement each other well.
So we had the regular version of this, the Arkham's Finest, on the website, featured as a beer of the day about 6 weeks ago. And it was a good beer. It was a good coffee porter. But just having this as the barrel-aged version is much better. I think the smoothness that the barrels impart on the beer, it's really like incredible and makes it a better beer. Obviously, a brewery can't make all their beers into a barrel-aged beer, but just putting it in a barrel, aging it, and then aging it in a bottle, I think really enhances those flavors.
It's very smooth.
Definitely. All right, Britton, well, why don't you recap the beers we've had tonight, and then we'll spin the wheel and see who will go first.
Alrighty, we started off with La Vermontoise from Hill Farmstead Brewery in collaboration with Brasserie de Blougy. Then we went on to Cerise de Michigan from Lake Effect Brewing, the
Star Destroyer Imperial Darkside Lager,
which was a collaboration between Ecliptic and Gigantic Brewing. Then we had the Enjoy After July 4th, 2016, which is the fourth edition Brett IPA from Stone. We had the Umami Monster from Garage Project out of Wellington, New Zealand. Then we moved on to the NXS Red IPA from Sierra Nevada and Carl Strauss. The Rover Truck Stout from Toppling Goliath. And we ended the night with the barrel-aged Arkham's Finest Porter from Modern Brewery.
Joel, you ready?
I'm ready. Here we go.
Kira goes first.
I actually had kind of a tough time tonight, but I think with the drinkability factor and how much I actually thoroughly enjoyed, and I do tend to go more to sours lately, I'm going to go with the Cerise de Michigan. Very light, easy going. I feel like I could drink it kind of throughout the day with the summery season coming along.
All right. So all the beers we had tonight were pretty good, enjoyable. Especially the back half of the show. I like on my little sheet, I rate everything on a 5-point scale with decimals to the tenths and whatnot. And the last four are all within 1/10 of each other. I have a tie, so it's between Umami Monster and the barrel-aged Arkham's Finest Porter. Those were both excellent beers, but I think I'm going to go with the Umami Monster because it's the most unique beer I've ever had. It was everything that I love about food, but in a beer. So it was savory, it was salty, there was smoky molasses. It was the essence of umami. So that is my choice for beer of the day.
So I'll keep this pretty simple. For me, my beer of the day was
the Star Destroyer Imperial Dark Side Lager.
I think it's not what I expected from a beer. I think the subtle flavors of the roasted malts as well as just the sweetness, it was a very well balanced beer. And I remember when all the beers in this first half were over, the first beer that I grabbed that had a little bit left over was that beer, because that's the one that I enjoyed the most. And I was really impressed with that beer.
So I'm going to go with the last beer, and not biased because I went there. And I'll give you my reasoning in a second, but my beer of the day is the barrel-aged Arkham's Finest. And really, there were some great beers tonight. I like the Hill Farmstead. I like the Star Destroyer. I like the Umami Monster. But the Modern Brewery barrel-aged Arkham's Finest is my pick because I like porters, but I really enjoy a barrel-aged porter. I think it just makes the beer so much better. Just like I like a stout, but I love an imperial stout that is barrel-aged. And barrel-aged porters are not a type of beer that I run across very often. And so I appreciate the full body and mouthfeel of that beer, because most porters to me are a little thin and watery. And I like to drink a barrel-aged porter that has full like flavor profile that I can enjoy. So for me, no doubt, the barrel-aged Arkham's Finest from Modern Brewery in St. Louis.
All right, for me, using almost the same argument as Jeff just laid out, but on a different beer, is for me, it's the Rover Truck Stout from Toppling Goliath. So many breweries have the Imperial Stout, where you have all the bold flavors, the complexities, and 12, 13% ABV. Well, this one here from Toppling Goliath is proof that you can have a full-flavored, full-bodied stout without having to go over the top on the alcohol and everything. It was still complex. There was still a ton of flavor. It wasn't thin. It wasn't watery. It was just a solid stout with enough complexity to, you know, every sip you take, you're going to be getting a little bit of a different take on it. So I was impressed with that beer. That's my beer of the day. I'm looking forward to going into Toppling Goliath next week.
That's 5 different beers.
1, 2, 3. There's 5 of us.
Right. Never, everyone picked a different beer. That's how good the lineup was.
Has that ever happened before? I don't know.
I don't think so.
I could easily justify any of the ones that you guys picked.
Usually
too.
There's doubled up or multiple, but.
Well, 71 podcasts in, and there's still a first time for everything. And that will close out our 71st episode. I want to thank you for tuning in. I want to thank Jeff for coming up and doing the show with us and bringing beer with him. So we are going on our trip to a bunch of different breweries. I don't know even what the count is, but we'll post it on the website so you know where we'll be. We'll post it on Twitter. And if you're in that area and you want to come out and say hi to us and drink some beer, you're more than welcome to it.
We will see you then, and we will see you next time here for Kira Hopkin, Britton Miner, Joel Miner, Jeff Miller. I'm Dallas Helliker. You've been listening to the Beer of the Day podcast.